KQED.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians, on the web at chcf.org, and URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical support to public agencies and private companies. URS.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. Coming up, Washington is about to swallow the poison pill that was supposed to avoid deep, across-the-board budget cuts.
But clearly it didn't. And I think it's a demonstration of the hard edge of polarization and partisanship in the Senate.
Senator Dianne Feinstein tells us why California will get walloped the most. Also, a dazzling new light structure on the San Francisco Bay Bridge, and a Cal State campus goes to church, preaching the virtues of a college education to African-American families.
Statistically speaking, I was told that I wasn't going to be able to make it to college. It was a surprise that I even graduated from high school. I just had to prove that I'm better than that, and that that's not my fate.
It's the California Report. Well, it's a moment Congress and the president swore would never come, but here it is. Across-the-board budget cuts. Sequestration, if you prefer. Cuts affecting the military and domestic programs to the tune of $85 billion. So today we begin with how those cuts will be felt here in California. Friday morning, I asked Senator Dianne Feinstein how California would be affected by the cuts compared to other states.
California overwhelmingly is affected the most. We're almost double anybody else. And that's because we have a big defense sector. So for us, it's immediately 64,000 civilian DOD employees that would be furloughed.
And Feinstein says that's just the start.
It's a cut in our base operations by $54 million. That's the Army, Air Force 15, Navy, maintenance of five ships in San Diego. And then it goes on. And I'm very concerned about the education cuts and what happens on the border, food safety, FAA, law enforcement cuts. It's across the board, and you have no flexibility.
At larger airports like SFO and LAX, those cuts Senator Feinstein mentioned could mean longer lines at TSA screening and border control when you return from another country. And if air traffic controllers are furloughed, it could mean more flight delays. Meanwhile, at 23 smaller California airports, like San Carlos Airport up the road from SFO, control towers could be closed completely. San Carlos Airport spokesman Marshall Wilson says trained pilots are used to doing instrument takeoffs and landings safely, but he compares it to traffic intersections.
It might be perfectly safe if everyone's following the rules and drivers know what they're doing. But generally, is it safer, say, if you have a crossing guard there, another set of eyes and ears watching over it? Yes. And that's one of the reasons we like having air traffic controllers here. It is that extra set of eyes and ears.
Also on the chopping block, national parks. California has 26 of them, including the crown jewel, Yosemite, where park ranger Scott Gedeman says the fear of budget cuts is already being felt.
We are not hiring any seasonal rangers at this point. The seasonal rangers are kind of the backbone of the park. You know, we'll hire rangers to collect, you know, entrance fees at the gate, to patrol the campgrounds at night, to talk to folks about bears, to lead the interpretive programs.
One reason California takes a disproportionate hit, as Senator Feinstein alluded to, we depend a lot on defense spending. Not quite like the 1970s and 80s, but still enough to feel potential cuts like these. And nowhere is that more true than in San Diego, home to Camp Pendleton and other military bases. Reporter Allison St. John from KPBS is here to talk about that. And Allison, who is going to feel the Pentagon cuts the most?
Well, our economy is very heavily dependent on the military. It's estimated between 20 and 25% of our jobs depend on DOD spending in one way or the other. Ironically, the uniformed military, of whom we have about 100,000 people, won't be that immediately affected. Their pay and benefits is not affected, nor will veteran benefits. But the private sector is what's going to see the worst of it right away. Shipyards, NASSCO, for example, these shipyards are losing contracts, and 4,000 people eventually could be laid off, as predicted. Already there have been 2,000 pink slips issued, and 375 people have been laid off as of today at NASSCO. There's also these 64,000 civilian DOD workers that Feinstein mentioned, and we have 25,000 DOD civilians working with the Navy here. So starting in April, they could see their pay cut by 20%. And finally, contractors who earn about $8 to $9 billion for San Diego have been putting in hiring freezes and are beginning to think about laying people off because of programmatic cuts to their contracts.
All of it going on, of course, during the middle of a war. How are local officials bracing for the sequestration?
Well, many of them, of course, are saying they really haven't really got their arms around how this could affect the economy. Our mayor, Bob Filner, who spent 20 years in Congress, says he thinks that this must eventually get solved before it hits. But he went down to the shipyards to rally the shipyard workers who are already losing their jobs. And here's some of what he had to say.
Yes, it's for our readiness. Yes, it's for our country's future. Yes, it's for ship repair. Yes, it's for our Navy. But it's about you guys who work every single day with great competence, with energy.
And Allison, Filner, of course, is a Democrat. The city of San Diego, pretty Democratic. But what about Republicans? It's a blue or really a, you know, a purple county. What are Republicans like, say, Congressman Duncan Hunter or Daryl Issa saying?
Well, Duncan Hunter, who of course served some time in Iraq himself, has been very outspoken and says that proposed cuts to the fleet from 313 to 306 ships would affect the Navy's long-term ability to project force on a global scale. And he says that the Navy needs 500 ships and needs to expand rather than contract. So they, of course, are blaming all this on the president, but they're calling it the threat of a hollow force if this goes into effect.
And those Pentagon cuts, of course, translate into jobs lost or salaries reduced, as do other spending reductions and things like research. Mina Kim is KQED's health reporter. And Mina, California is, of course, a state with plenty of federally funded research. Where would the sequester hit along those lines?
That's right, Scott. The National Institutes of Health fund many of the state's medical research institutions and will lose $1.6 billion under the automatic cuts. Now, UC San Francisco actually gets more money from NIH than any other public university here, and it's projecting losses of nearly $30 million this year and more than 200 unfunded projects. UCSF's Vice Chancellor for Research, Keith Yamamoto, says NIH has trimmed previously approved grants by 10 to 20% in preparation for the cuts. And so researchers have already been making adjustments.
So parts of a project are simply not being done. In some cases, that may mean that a hire of a trainee or a permanent staff investigator would not happen. It would be at least delayed.
And Yamamoto says these disruptions are enough to halt, you know, medical advancements or stall careers.
And Mina, what about health programs? Medicaid, of course, the big one is protected under sequestration, but there must be other health programs. What about ones, particularly ones that help, say, women and children?
Right. Health advocates for the poor, like United Ways of California, are particularly concerned with cuts to programs like Head Start, Meals on Wheels, the Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program, or WIC, and also Emergency Food and Shelter. I mean, we're also looking at fewer children receiving vaccinations, fewer people getting help paying for their HIV medications, and even fewer HIV tests.
And then finally, Mina, what about Medicare? Are seniors going to feel these cuts?
Medicare patients won't see cuts to their benefits, but the doctors and hospitals that serve them will see payment cuts. And so the head of the California Medical Association, he said that that's going to make it harder for some doctors to see Medicare patients and could exacerbate a doctor shortage that some seniors are already reporting. Now, the one thing about these cuts is that under law, they don't take effect until April 1st. So there's some hope that there'll be public outcry from these sequester cuts that could spur lawmakers to avert them.
And certainly a lot of people hoping that happens. Finally, education. The sequester is going to take a big chunk, or would, out of those programs. And KQED's Sharla Bair picks it up from there. Sharla, it seems like California routinely ends up near the bottom of lists of per-pupil spending already. These budget cuts could only make it worse, I assume. Where is it going to be felt?
Unfortunately, students of all ages could be hit. The state stands to lose hundreds of millions of dollars, as Mina mentioned, that will hit Head Start early learning programs. K through 12 school districts will also be hit. College financial aid is not safe. Most of the money is meant to help the neediest students. We're talking more than 9,000 work study students, possibly up to 6,000 Head Start students. At the local K through 12 level, the biggest chunks will come out of federal funds for special education and Title I for low-income students. But education officials actually say districts can't cut some of those programs. I spoke with Erica Hoffman. She's a legislative advocate with the Association of California School Administrators.
Those are federally mandated programs, and we can't not do them. So in order to make sure that students still receive the services they need, schools are going to have to start making this up out of other parts of their budget.
In other words, they may have to cut teachers, possibly up to 1,200 of them statewide, and that means class sizes could swell.
And at some point, especially if we're talking about preschool programs, that kind of thing, parents are going to be affected too.
Oh, yeah, the ripple effect could be huge. I mean, this is, you know, parents and families who rely on these for taking care of the kids so they can go to work. So there could also be folks who can't get to work. I mean, it goes on.
And of course, some folks feel this is just one big poker game, that a last-minute deal is going to stop all this from happening, or at least the worst of it. I know you all will be keeping a close eye on that to see what happens. Mina Kim and Charlotte Bear from KQED, Allison St. John from KPBS in San Diego. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Many people see education as the best way to level the playing field, achieve the American dream, if I can mix my metaphors. But a new study this week by UC Davis describes a disturbing achievement gap between California's Latino and Black community college students and their Asian and white peers. A Cal State University program is reaching out to African American students before they get to college, bringing its recruitment effort to church. From KAZU, Krista Almanzon reports.
Sunday service at the Greater Victory Temple in the Central Coast town of Seaside is a lively event. A trio of singers sways on stage while church members stand in the pews, some shaking tambourines. And this Sunday, there's an added twist. Up on stage are the interim president and admissions director from nearby Cal State Monterey Bay. They stand alongside church elders.
We officially would like to welcome you to our Super Sunday celebration. Amen.
Super Sunday is an annual recruitment event in the Cal State University system. During the months of February and March, top officials from the 23 CSU campuses visit predominantly African American churches to speak about what it takes to get into college. David Linevers is director of admissions at CSUMB.
It's the mission of the university and the mission of the CSU. Very important that we're continually serving a diverse population in California.
African Americans make up about 5% of students in the entire CSU system. It's about 4% for the UC system. The last census shows that Blacks account for 6.6% of the state's population, but increased recruitment efforts like Super Sunday are bridging that gap. System-wide, applications from African Americans are up, and at CSUMB, its African American student body has increased by 80% since the school started these targeted recruitment efforts 5 years ago. During this Super Sunday service, there aren't any high school-aged African Americans in the pews, but they aren't necessarily the target of Super Sunday.
We know that education starts with parents and grandparents, aunts and uncles, promoting that to the students and helping them stay engaged in it. So that's the message of Super Sunday, not just to reach the sixth graders and the high schoolers, but the parents are the decision makers.
It's those decision makers who fill the lobby after the service. Church members crowd around information tables set up by CSUMB staff, students, and community organizations. Retired librarian Frankie Green stops to pick up some information for her granddaughter. She's a fourth grader who excels at math.
And she's going to become Condoleezza Rice, and where she's going to make lots of money, and I tell her that's who she is. I'm not Condoleezza Rice. I said, I know you're not, But you of my Condoleezza Rice, and you're going to go to college and finish college.
One of the pamphlets Green takes is a Getting Into College guide. It starts with classes kids should take in the sixth grade, like a second language, then continues year by year through high school. Martha Henry, the church's director of Christian education, says Greater Victory Temple has long promoted higher education. Participation by Cal State Monterey Bay in recent years just takes it to another level.
By CSUMB coming in here, they're saying, okay, we share that same dream that you have for higher education. We have the roadmap. Here are the steps. Let us guide you.
Kimberly Shaver's family guided her on that path to college. The CSUMB senior staffs a table in the lobby for the campus group Black Students United. She says outside her family, the messages about her future weren't so positive.
Statistically speaking, I was told that I wasn't going to be able to make it to college. It was a surprise that I even graduated from high school. It was expected that I would have at least two kids by now, and I just had to prove that I'm better than that and that that's not my fate.
Shavers graduates this year with a degree in business. She eventually plans to start a nonprofit to help kids in disadvantaged communities get on a path to college. For the California Report, I'm Krista Almanzon.
Send us your thoughts about the California Report. Shoot an email to calreport@kqed.org. Or comment on past stories online at californiareport.org. You'll see when you get there that we archive, blog, tweet, and podcast. Listen to the California Report whenever it's convenient for you. You can sign up at californiareport.org. And, of course, our podcast is available through iTunes, too. The seasons for salmon and crab are celebrated by California fishermen and seafood lovers alike. But herring and anchovy season, not really that big a deal for most of us. And yet, without them for food, there would be no bigger fish. Not that long ago, California's herring population nearly collapsed. And as Shannon Service reports, herring are making a comeback, but they're still struggling.
There was no fish in 77. Then it rained, and in 78 was huge year.
Captain Ernie Kopp has fished herring on San Francisco Bay for 35 years. He's offloading his catch on a cool Monday morning at Pier 45, just behind Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco.
There's scales everywhere if you look with them. And that's after I washed.
Each winter, tens of millions of herring flood the bay, setting off a frenzy of birds, marine mammals, and fishing boats.
Let me ask you what he's doing right now. What's going on?
They are going to put these fish in these boxes. It's going to be in slush ice is how these fish are going to be transported to the freezer.
And from there, the fish will be processed so their little golden eggs, called roe, can be shipped off to Japan, where they're a delicacy.
Send it!
Four years ago, there was almost no roe to enjoy. California nearly lost its herring population. Scientists believe a lack of food source and warming water caused the numbers to shrink by 90%. Government decisions to close the herring season and impose strict catch limits helped bring back some of the herring. But now there's a new problem. The little silver fish are getting tinier. It's getting tougher to find older, more valuable herring.
In fact, there's been a very, very dramatic decrease in the age distribution of the population.
Biologist Anna Weinstein with Audubon, California, is kayaking through hundreds of brown pelicans and harbor seals near Sausalito, ground zero for the herring spawn. She says the herring that are breeding this year are almost all 2 or 3 years old.
Well, what's the problem with that? Well, this is a fish that lives to be 10 to 13 years old and is a multiple-year spawner. And the eggs of older fish, there tend to be more eggs. They tend to be better quality eggs.
And the loss of high-quality eggs means less herring in the future, a big problem for the marine food chain.
The small fish sardines, anchovies, smelts, young rockfish, young salmon, and herring are literally the heartbeat of the ocean. It's what our predators need to survive and thrive.
Forage fish, as they're called, are in decline globally. Some conservation groups took the National Marine Fisheries Service to court in San Francisco, asking for stronger fishing regulations on forage fish. While herring aren't included in the current lawsuit, the groups Audubon and Earth Justice have expressed concern about how California Fish and Wildlife is managing the state's herring stock.
Yeah, there's some stuff to tow on. We can get a sample here.
Tom Greiner with Fish and Wildlife is out on the bay catching herring samples to take back to the department's lab. He says the state is monitoring the problem with older herring.
It's actually a coast-wide concern, so it's not just San Francisco Bay. If we only saw it in fish populations, then we'd probably assume that it's overfishing. But the fact that we see it in populations that with no fishery makes us think it may be a different cause. We're not sure.
Greiner is aware that the double whammy of shrinking fish and fewer mature eggs comes at a bad time for the herring fishing fleet. Roe prices in Japan are sliding. That's due in part to competition, but also the Japanese are eating less roe. Some local chefs have an idea that they think will help protect the bay's herring. It's a little counterintuitive, but chefs like Kenny Belov of Fish Restaurant in Sausalito suggest to save local herring, we may want to start eating them.
We wouldn't do any damage by leaving the fish in the bay and taking less. Higher quality, giving it to chefs that want to utilize the entire protein. And there's definitely a buzz. Chefs want to pickle it, they want to smoke it, they want to cure it, they want to serve it fresh, and they're getting their customers asking for it.
While the demand for herring in the bay is still pretty low, the foodie plan might just reduce pressure on an already stressed fish. Last year, local herring fishermen like Kopf got twice as much per pound for herring bound for local plates as for those headed to Japan. For the California Report, I'm Shannon Service.
Finally today, the San Francisco Bay Bridge is the Rodney Dangerfield of bridges, overshadowed by the iconic Golden Gate Span. But now the old gray workhorse is having its moment. The new Eastern Span opens next fall, and this Tuesday night, artist Leo Villarreal will unveil a massive light sculpture he's designed for the western section connecting Treasure Island to San Francisco. He's hung 25,000 LED lights. That's right, 25,000. On cables of the bridge's north side. KQED's Cy Musiker visited with the artist and has this report.
I meet Villarreal on San Francisco's Embarcadero on the edge of the bay. You can hear the bells sounding behind us in the clock tower of the ferry building, but Villarreal is focused on the sweeping view he has to the south of the suspension span and the patterns forming in the lights he's hung.
For me, it's all about discovery, figuring out what it can do. And I don't know in advance, and there's a lot of chance and randomness in my process. So I'm here to make discoveries.
In his lap, Villarreal holds a remote desktop connected to a computer in the bridge's central anchorage with which he's orchestrating the lights. Villarreal has been working on this project for more than a year, and now that he's spent so much time with the bridge, the commuter workhorse of the Bay Area, I ask him what he makes of its personality.
You don't want to mess with, you know, I feel like a lot of respect for it. I don't want to mess with it. I want to add something and augment what's here. These are the icons of the Bay Area, the bridges. And I think there's also an honesty and integrity to the piece. That's very similar to what the bridge is like. I've done a couple of cable walks and gone to the top of the bridge and was amazed at how efficient it all is.
We're looking up at the bridge, but then you look down at your computer screen and you see representations of those LED lights on the screen with controllers to change the way those lights, how intense they are, what the patterns are. And show me how you fiddle with that. How can you make a pattern?
I have various different systems. This is using a lot of physics. It's a program that we wrote called Particle Universe, and we can change their mass, their velocity, the gravity.
As Villarreal talks, he makes the light seem to fall from the tops of the cables to the bottom. And then a shadow moves across the lights from Treasure Island toward the city and back again. And then the lights ripple as though reflecting the waves on the bay below.
But all these things you find in nature, and as an artist, I can use these equations and rules as material and really just play with them. So I'm here looking for something exciting or compelling to happen, waiting for it to surprise me. And when that does happen, I capture that moment, and that becomes part of the mix.
There's been some controversy recently over spending for the new $6.4 billion eastern span of the Bay Bridge. Governor Brown vetoed an almost $10 million promotional contract with a consulting firm. But the $8 million budget for the Bay Lights is all coming from private donations. And Villarreal says the project will have economic benefits the same as other big art pieces, like Christo's Gates in New York City's Central Park.
It's great to have that as an example because people really get the power of what you can do with monumental public art and the benefits it can have to the city. Because this project, we've estimated, will bring an additional $97 million of economic activity to the city.
I saw that statistic and I thought, really? People are going to fly here and spend tourist dollars here just to see this bridge?
Yes. Public art is a powerful magnet and it does stimulate a lot. I've just seen little glimmers of it here in my time programming, but a lot of people are drawn to this, and many people already have told me that they feel anxiety when it goes out, when it's not on, like something is missing.
Villarreal lives in New York, but he's long been a regular at Burning Man, and he says he wants people to gather on the Embarcadero to see the lights the same way people gather around campfires out on the Black Rock Desert. And it seems to be working this night as people gather nearby, pointing up to the bridge.
It looks kind of like some kind of star constellation to me. It becomes ethereal instead of something which is so prosaic that we're used to looking at.
So what do you make of the Bay Bridge lights?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I think it adds a lot of beauty to the city.
And how would you compare the bridge before and after?
I don't know. I think a lot of people think the Bay Bridge is just as important as the Golden Gate Bridge. And this just really sort of takes it up to the next level, I think, in competing with the Golden Gate.
I hope they leave it like this. The only thing they got to do now is do the other side and it'll be complete.
The observations of Amy Galley, James Roten, and Tasha McMoney about the Bay Lights. They come on for a 2-year run Tuesday night at 9. For the California Report, I'm Cy Musiker.
By the way, it's estimated to cost about $30 each night to power those 25,000 lights. We have a video of a Bay Lights test run and a photo of the artist at work. Check them out at californiareport.org. That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. You can always find us online at californiareport.org, and we're on Facebook, too. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Scott Schaefer. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. The technical producer is Seal Muller. We had additional engineering from Howard Gelman. The online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Guy Marzorati and Gina Shalaba. Our editorial team includes Victoria Malione, Susie Rocho, Ingrid Becker, Bruce Kuhn, and Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation. With nomination information about the 2014 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards available at www.irvine.org. And the California Endowment. Health happens in neighborhoods at calendow.org.